This is August 23rd, and the next meeting will be on September 27th, 1992, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Well then, good morning, my friends. And today I would like to state that we are beginning the wind-up of our work together. And as such, we're going to be going over and expanding and deepening a certain set of understandings. And what you are going to begin to experience, I hope, is that through all these years, we have spent a lot of time talking about what we could call secondary levels of understanding, things that are true on a relatively limited level. And that's when we have such questions as, you know, who should you marry and should you move here and all of that. But in the remaining time we have, and remember, I promised it would be no later than May of 95, any time prior, whenever it feels appropriate, we'll just end. But I want you please to understand that from now on, do not sign up for any workshop. Do not come to any of these meetings unless you are really willing to hear what is going to seem like a very similar statement again and again from a different point of view. Because at last, we have laid all of the groundwork for what is the final teaching, and you all have heard it before. But we are going to only emphasize that, and that means that there will be just a lot of deepening for those of you that are willing to deepen around this basic issue, the basic teaching, which is representative of what I will say today. It is nothing you haven't heard before. And if you go ooh and ah, it means you haven't been paying attention all these years. So no oohs and ahs, please. So the basic understanding that many people have is that you have inside of yourself an inferior, kind of a weak, wimpy kind of a soul, and that if you're very, very good and do really good things, that eventually this soul will be so beautiful that God will notice it and love it and take it to God's heart, and then you go to heaven and all this business. And that is fine, and does it work for a lot of people? Of course it does, but I have to say that this teaching and the last however months we have of it is not going to dwell on that kind of approach. And the approach is going to be austere and simple and we hope humorous, but it's going to be the simple understanding that all of your created ideas about who you are, your ideas that you really are some kind of an identity that goes through lifetime after lifetime, getting ever better and ever better, that this is not that teaching. Please come in and find seats anywhere at all. That the teaching is simply ever present in this moment in such an obvious way, that which you call the source of your being, that which is the God within, that which is whatever you want to call it, is ever present in this moment. And when you cease to dwell on yourself as an individualized person, you begin to be aware of that which is the infinite awareness within you. Another way of saying it, unfortunately, you are very addicted to seeing yourself as an individual moving through your problems, getting deeper into your problems, understanding your problems, becoming more aware of your problems and your beliefs and your ideas. And I will agree that that's an interesting way to live your life, but that is not this teaching. And this teaching simply says that this is the time for those of you that, you know, we'll probably end up with one row of people right here. Let's get a smaller auditorium because there'll be one row of people. Because the teaching is going to be simply, you have got to quit identifying with your limited egotistical projection and start being totally focused and aware of this other in every moment. And when you begin to understand exactly what I mean, you will decide whether this teaching is for you or not. That means every time you begin to think about one of your problems, I want you at the same time to remember that you are dwelling on a non-reality. That you are dwelling on a temporary idea, and whatever happens, whether it works this way or that way, is infinitely unimportant, and it is not going to bring you to the God self. What brings you to the God self is to stay totally aware of the God self. That's what brings it. And when you begin to understand that what you are looking for is so ever-present and so obvious and so natural every moment that you've overlooked it, then you begin to get serious about how we can work together. I would like to repeat again. There is the idea in the mind that God is something outside, something beautiful, something different from you, something vast and this and that, and then if you do this and that, then somehow you'll meet this and that. Well, again and again, we have to return to the simplicity. We've said it. If it's not here, ever present, now, if you are not experiencing it now, you are never going to experience it. Again, if you are not experiencing it now, you are never going to experience it, because that which is aware of all of the comings and goings and ups and downs of your life is, that awareness is the God self, is the totality, is the source, is what you're seeking. And so we are asking you, those of you who are ready for the rigors of this, at the same time that you state, I have a problem, I need to solve it, I'm not loving enough, I'm not this, I'm not that, as the moment that all of that is present, at the same time, ever present, I want this awareness to be there, that whatever this is that I am concerned about in the moment is totally temporary and has absolutely nothing to do with the God self. That you are paying attention to the wrong thing. You are addicted to watching and taking care of a very temporary, impermanent coming together of ideas and beliefs. You have misnamed it and called it you. And our job is to pull you back and back and back to what is the real you, what is the real I of awareness. Now, let us talk we are going to come at this in as many ways as possible. But in the end, the only thing that will make it real for you is your commitment to the doing of this. And I will tell you with all of my honor, if you do not learn how to do it as many moments of every half hour as you can, you're going to miss it. Do you understand? We are talking about stopping playing around with enlightenment and deciding. But the question I ask those of you today in this room and on this tape and so on, I please would like from now on, nobody please come unless you are one of those who says, I believe I can become enlightened in this lifetime, and I am willing to spend whatever time and awareness that it takes to make it happen. And if that isn't your commitment, I would really appreciate it that you go somewhere else, because you are going to be bored to death listening to all of this. The idea that you cannot do it in this lifetime, or the idea that you have so much time, are illusions. One, yes, you can do it. And two, you have no idea how much time you have. Those of you that are young say, well, I'll do it when I'm in my 50s. The people in the 50s, well, I'll do it when I retire. Those in the 70s, well, I'll do it when I'm about to die. Well, you know, you've got to make up your minds. This is a rigorous non-approach. This is it. Thank you. This is a rigorous non-approach to a non-goal, all right? And if that's not confusing enough, we'll work on it, all right? It is like the woman in the famous Zen stories who wakes up one day and she says, I've lost my head, I've lost my head. She runs out into the village and she's screaming, I've lost my head. And everybody says, you are crazy. Your head's right where it's always been, on your shoulders. No, I've lost my head. And the story goes on and on and on. And finally, in the story, they tie her to the bedpost. And so now she's forced to sit down. And in the sitting down, finally, through the awareness of the moment, she discovers her head. Now, you could then say that would you say that she didn't have a head and that she created it and it finally God gave her head back? Or what is the depth of the story? And so the depth of the story is very important here, because it is time for you to really decide and to cease pretending that you have a lot of time. Now, many of you say, well, I'll do it next lifetime. My friends, if you have looked at the way this planet is going, I think you need to seriously consider whether this isn't the lifetime to do this. You understand? I think it's time to decide. All right, let's talk again about the dilemma that we see you in. On the one hand, now that the so-called New Age has come, and now you believe in past reincarnations and so on and so on, you have a tendency, by believing in past lives, to also project the possibility of future lives. And so then you can say, well, I don't have to do it now, I can do it later. Well, all of that is fine, except that with that kind of an inner attitude, you can absolutely be assured that you will not do it in this lifetime, that you will, because of the very fact that, you know, you could ask, what is it that that keeps on creating? What is it that comes back lifetime after lifetime? Since you do not have a separate self called whatever it is going through different stages, what is it that comes back life after life? And what it is, are you ready? For it is your unfinished desires. It is your unfulfilled desires that keep coming back and back and back. They propel themselves. There is no Emmy Chaney running them, but the desires, because they are unfulfilled, continue to come back and come back and come back. All right? Understood. Now, so what I'm asking for is for you to seriously look at your own life and ask yourself, what are my seriously unfulfilled desires? And if you have them, get them fulfilled. Or you will have to return, and I am absolutely dead serious on this. If it is your desire to have the love affair of the life, for heaven's sakes, quit your job, go somewhere, find it, do it, and get over it. Get over it. All right? Quit talking about it. Quit thinking about it. Quit fantasizing it. Go and do it. If you want to be a millionaire, give up everything else and put your focus on it and become a millionaire. Because if you do not, that desire is going to pull you back. And the only way out is to have only one desire. And that is, I want to know the nature of my being. I want to know if there is a God and what it is. I want to know my true state of being. I want to know my true nature. I want to know whatever you call this enlightenment. I want to be free of pain and suffering. Is that good enough? Enlightenment is a state of being free of pain and suffering. Pain and suffering continues, but in such a minute way that it is immersed in a sea of bliss. So the bliss is the predominance, and the rising and falling of the pain and suffering is there in a very minute state, such as you have something is wrong with your toe, and it occasionally gives you trouble, but the rest of your being is full of awareness and power. All right? It's like that. And that, if that is not your only desire, then you are going to have to propel yourself yet again back here to do it again. So I ask you to be very serious and clear about your unfulfilled desires. Fulfill the ones that you cannot talk yourself out of, and don't fool yourself. Do not fool yourself. And give yourself the entire permission to fulfill that desire in whatever way is meaningful for you. And I am deadly serious. I am deadly serious. If you have in your mind an idea of a certain kind of a person, a certain kind of a lifestyle, a certain, say power. So many people want to come back, want to experience in this lifetime some kind of personal power, either power in a financial situation, political situation, social, whatever it might be. Others have an incredible desire to be gorgeous and beautiful. You know, when they're 80, they want to look like they're 50. That's a desire. That is a desire. And you have to begin to be accountable, not for your sins, because I don't even know what that word means, but you have to be accountable for your unfulfilled desires and begin to look at them so intensely and then make up your mind. And when you have decided that whatever this is might not be worth giving up the ocean of bliss, which is what is the opposite of that, then perhaps you will begin to be more serious about our quest. Because in all of these years, I have noticed so many of you have come close to and are standing on the brink of some totally clear awakenings, and something is holding you back. Now, what I experience in many of you that is holding you back is not so much a lot of desires. For example, let us say that you have young children. If you have a desire to live to be a certain age, to see the children and the grandchildren, that's a desire. If, on the other hand, you have a desire that your children have full and beautiful lives, whatever happens to you, that's very different. When you begin to look at the desires and realize we're back to where we began, if all of the desires arise from some kind of ego identity, all right? Now, if you start paying attention to your thoughts, you're going to see that every thought contains a desire. Let me say it again. Every thought contains a desire. A desire to impress, a desire to be right, a desire to be heard, a desire to get this or whatever. So when you begin to watch the field of desire that things rise and fall in, you begin to get a feeling of what we're talking about. And when the excitement comes into you that you have the potential to experience the full light of enlightenment, which is constantly around and about you every moment, then you begin to realize that the way to that light, the way to that feeling, is to keep identifying as the limited ideas rise up in your mind, to keep knowing that they are not the objective. Your objective is not to fulfill that desire. Your objective is to be free of your limitation, to be free of pain and suffering. I think to be free of pain and suffering is as good a way to put the goal as possible. Because when we talk about God, then we get in a lot of trouble. Because, you know, some of you have some very angry gods romping around inside of your awareness. And these gods are not exactly loving and beneficial, you know. They have very angry and their teeth drip blood and they're waiting for you, you know. And so I don't think finding God in this abstract terms is really fits very well in the psyche, because that God does produce fear. But to know that there is a state that is free of pain and suffering and confusion and doubt and is filled with bliss and joy and wonder and light, to know that, I think, should be a sufficiency for the goal. All right, so what am I asking? I'm asking you to begin to realize that you have got to quit thinking of yourself as an independent ego walking around in an independent life. You have got to realize that, however confusing this may seem to you today, you are not that individualized ego. That is an illusion, and what you really are is the awareness that is aware of that projection, that self, those ideas, those feelings. Everything that you can see or feel is something that is felt by awareness. And it is the awareness itself that is the, whatever you want to call it, the light within, the God within, the wonder within. And so what we're asking is for you to first and foremost today, if you can, to begin to realize that you have got to stop thinking about yourself that way. You are not Joan. You are not Guy. You are not. You are not. You believe yourself to be, and that's fine. That's, everybody will tell you. When you begin to doubt that that is the reality, that the reality is something far different, far more magnificent, far more freedom producing than that little self that you keep predicting your ideas back and forth upon, you begin to pay less attention to it. And the minute that you realize it's a, for example, it's given again and again, the child goes down to the beach and makes a sandcastle. Well, you know, the child may think that it's a real sandcastle that they can move in and get furniture and get a mortgage and I don't know what else you would do in a sandcastle. But you as the adult, you look and you know that any moment is unreal. The tide will come in and it will go out. It's a temporary rising and it will go out. And what is real in this case is the substance of the sand itself. All right? All right, just a way of talking about it. So as you begin to understand that everything in form, I'm talking about every idea you have, every feeling you have, every emotion you have, Every sense of form you have out there is not it. It is absolutely, totally temporary and is not the focus. When you begin to walk around with that kind of opening, then you begin to be ready to ask the basic question, which is, well, if that's not all of me, if that is not all real, if my body is not me, if my emotions are not me, if my ideas and my actions and my past are not me, then what is, who them am I? Because, and this is a very important point, my friends, please focus upon it. When you go to sleep at night, you leave, when you move past the state of dream, you fall into the non-dream state. There is no form, there's no body, there are no ideas, there's no scenery, there's nothing. And yet, when you awaken in the morning, you absolutely know that something called I had slept through the night, had removed itself from name and form. You do not think that you died when the last dream fragment came in, and then you reawakened and created yourself anew in the morning. There is a knowing. You say, ah, I slept deeply last night. Ah, I had a very deep, magnificent sleep in the night. We say, well, what was there? I don't know. Well, what did you see? Nothing. Well, what did you experience? I don't know. But you always, isn't this not true? Do you really question that there is some ongoing awareness that was in deep sleep and then awakened? Do you ever doubt that? I'm asking you, do you? You never wake up and say, I wonder if I, was that me sleeping? You know, I wonder, I mean, am I the same I that went to sleep or am I different and so on and so on? So the reason I use the dream state is to tell you that you know absolutely that some point of very familiar, please hear the word, very familiar something called you had a deep sleep, awoke, began to think, emote, move, see things, create form, do all of that. But you also know that that part that you had no sense of name and form was absolutely still ongoing during your sleep. And that is what you're looking for. It is that same thing that is ever present in every moment of your waking life if you will just begin to allow yourself to acknowledge that you are already experiencing it. Now, this is not something that you have to try to find. It's like the woman trying to find her head. You can't try to find your own awareness. Because awareness is the constant that you have misidentified as your limited self, whatever your name might be. It is that awareness that is ever present, and that is what you're looking for. And you say, I don't know how that feels. And I will tell you that it is so obvious you have overlooked it. It is so familiar that you have ignored it. It is so ever present that you've missed it. And it is that awareness that is not a feeling, that is, because a feeling can be a good feeling or a bad feeling. This is an awareness. And when you just shut up as many moments in your life, even when you're talking, and just snuggle down into the awareness of the moment, something very magical begins to happen. When you could say, look, if this is such a magnificent thing, this blissful thing, why am I not feeling its bliss now? When you begin to put your awareness, it's a funny way to say it, when you put awareness on awareness, what begins to happen is it begins to become alive for you in a new way. It begins to become more present. It's now it's in the background. And when you begin to just lean back and in the stillness to feel it, moment after moment of all of your waking days, just drop out of thoughts, drop out of words, drop out of emotions, and just be present in the moment, just present. When you do this, moment after moment, you begin to feel what we're talking about. Now those other limited views of yourself are screaming and yelling and making such a fuss that you have felt their feeling, their emotion, their movement, and you have taken second best. So when the excitement begins to build that something magnificently, wondrously blissful is ever present, and then you just begin to fall into the moment, to feel it, to experience it, to become aware of it, it begins to build within you. There will never be any more of that awareness than there is now. If you are waiting for a better time, a better rebirth, a better state, a better whatever, then I ask you to reconsider. This planet is in need of help. And the only thing that can concretely help the pain on this planet is for enough of you to choose to experience your enlightened nature so that you can begin to move in an enlightened way in the world. And that is the only way any changes are going to be made. And that depends on your willingness to stop playing around with the lesser self, the small limited self, and begin to be willing to experience the vastness of the enlightened awareness, which is constantly alive. As many of you as begin to do that, it's going to begin to have the 100th monkey effect on the planet. So we are no longer waiting. We are now begging. If you want to help, this is the only way. You cannot help others out of darkness until you are out of it yourself. And the only way out of darkness is to know fully and totally the light. And the only way you can know the light is to become aware. And the awareness is the light, and you can do it. I have told you, if I've told you anything all these years, I've said, will you believe me? Yes, you can. And I know that all of the doubts rise up. You say, yes, but it's written in the scriptures and so on. You know what else is written in every scripture that's worth anything? The scripture says at the end, we go back to the Buddha's story because he illustrates it so magnificently. At the end, Buddha had tried every single one of the scriptures. He'd done it all perfectly, so on, so on. Finally, and I'm paraphrasing here, he sits down under the tree and says, phooey. He says, nuts. It's not working, and I'm going to sit here until I either die or till I know. And in that moment, you will have to do the same thing. You will have to do the very same thing to sit down in your life exactly as it is and to find out what is that consistent, very familiar feeling, sensation, idea, awareness, whatever words you want, that you have constantly identified as you. You never misidentify. You never say, I don't know if I'm Margaret. You know that you're Margaret because you know what that feels like. You name it Margaret, we've misnamed it. Because there is no Margaret. There's just a conglomerate of things that rise and fall. But what is absolutely ongoing, eternal, is that otherness. And that is what you have got to decide to experience and to bring into the foreground instead of having it hum in the background. It is like going to the cinema, or whatever you call it. And the screen is there, and all of the ever-changing epics of the world and your own dramas, and the dramas of this and the dramas of that are all projected, and they're ever-changing. And you, of course, are watching all of the ever-changing drama, whereas the screen itself is what we're asking you to pay attention to. And it's very interesting, because if you decide to ever go to a cinema and try to ignore the ever-changing shapes and focus on the screen, you can do so. You can do so. Now, let's talk for a moment about Zen gardens, because they do happen to fit in here. In some of these wonderful old gardens in old Kyoto, the enlightened ones have created these magnificently simple stretches of something. And usually they're made up of very ordinary gravel, just gray ordinary gravel. And so here's this stretch of it. As large as this stage, perhaps a little larger or something. And there's a few lines here and there. And then they have two mounds. One mound rises here, and then a little further another mound arises, maybe this far off the ground. Now, the student of consciousness sits there and looks at this and sees all of the mounds and sees all the lines. Just sits there. And in an instant, all the lines have disappeared and the mounds are gone, and there's nothing but one unified, amazing stretch of something. All, I mean, it isn't a mental, an idea, a delusion. Awareness has taken all of the differences, the rising and falling, and has experienced it as one unified, magnificent field of awareness. Those smart little monks sitting around smiling in their enlightenment have created an amazing thing to be able to put into form something that, when you look upon it, gives you the ability to overcome the differences, the highs and the lows, the lights and the darks. And they, because they had experienced the unified field, have created the arena for you to visualize it. And the idea is not to sit there forever staring at this ever, you know, up and down, but to take it as a knowing inside yourself of a teaching from the depths of consciousness that what has to happen and will happen if you are willing to have it happen is all of the seeming highs and lows and differences and goods and bads and rights and wrongs and pains and pleasures and so on dissolve from their forms and become one incredible, vast, unified field of bliss, of delight, of joy, of wonder, of magnificence, of safety. You have been trying to create a safe world, and you haven't been able to do it. Because it is not in the nature of the rising and falling of the impermanent to have safety. And haven't you tried it? You've tried it endlessly. You're trying to do the wrong thing. You will not feel safe or ever feel safe in the rising and falling of the impermanence. The only thing that brings safety is what we will call the heart of home, or whatever you want to call it. This unified state where there is no differentiation, where there's just one blazing wholeness. How do you do it? Well, in as many months as we have left, we'll talk about it to the one remaining row or whoever's here. But again and again, we have to understand the simplicity begins today. If you cannot find a place in you that is willing to acknowledge and to come to full realization that this little self that you have tried so hard to perfect, that you see as so good and so pure and so holy and all of this, if you are not willing to let that goodness go, you see, it's your goodness. It's your goodness that you don't want to let go. But the difficulty is that you can't let go of your badness either. You know, you let them either, they both go or they both stay. And so you are going between the rising and falling of now you're hanging on to the goodness. And that's what you want to keep, this idea of yourself as a good person, a wise person, a spiritual person. You have to understand that in the unified ground of being, there is no good person, because if there is a good person, make no mistake, there's got to be a bad one. One cannot arise without the other. Your goodness cannot arise without your badness. Understand it. It's a basic knowing of awareness. And if you are going to continue to try to be the best person that you know how to be, that's fine. I have absolutely no argument with that. In fact, you probably have a happier life if you're trying to be good than if you're running around trying to be rude and crude and socially unacceptable. You know, the world will smile on you much greater, but that has nothing to do with awakening, and that has nothing to do with God, has nothing to do with that. It has to do with having people smile at you. And that is a short exchange for what we're talking about. Yes, be good to your neighbor. Yes, love them. Yes, love instead of hate. Yes, yes, but not because, but why? Because it makes you feel better. And because you will feel better, you will have a deeper sense of yourself, meaning that you have something within you that is strong enough, that is full enough, that is real enough to make this thrust of consciousness. Because if you think you are a wimp, you are not going to have enough awareness, enough focus, enough courage, and enough humor to make this ascent. Because it is a day-by-day, moment-by-moment ascent. And it's the toughest thing you'll ever do. And at the same time, it's the most natural thing you will ever do. Because it is what you are already doing. It is what you are already doing. And I'm getting all worked up here. Well, you see, when you have limited time, you have to get it all in. So, lesson one. Please, to begin to dwell on the idea that we presented this morning, that there is an ongoing, very familiar sense of who you are that is present in every moment of your life. You are never without that feeling. No matter what else is going on, that sensation, that familiarity of I is always there. Even when you have out-of-the-body projections, you still have that sense of I because it is not attached to the body. Those of you who have out-of-the-body experiences, you always know it's I. You never confuse yourself and said, did George go out of the body or did I go out of the body? You know who went out of the body. And who is it? It's not the body. It's the perfect example because the body is left behind. Much of the action is left behind. Oftentimes, the room of form and shape is left behind. But there is, no matter what experience this out-of-the-body awareness has, it still knows itself. It still knows itself. And it is that knowing of itself that is the awareness, which is what you're looking for, which is when you begin to awaken to its ever presence, begins to fill you with the most amazing wonder. And the main and foremost thing is an incredible sense of relief and gratitude. And the relief is that all of the horrors that you have invented in your mind about life and bodies and karma and heaven and hell and all of that, you know, are not real. The incredible gratitude that no matter what the limited self has created, that this incredible, vast, unified field has never changed. Has always been as it is, as it was, as it always shall be. And you use words like coming home. And that is an appropriate use of the word. It is coming home. Some of you may call it returning to the source. Some of you might call it returning to the void of awareness. Some of you might call it returning to the light, clear light. Of awareness, whatever. You could even use the wonderful words returning to God, as long as you don't have some kind of a personalized idea of that. And it is ever present. It is ever present. You have missed it because you are looking for something different than what you are now experiencing. Let me repeat. You have missed it because you are looking for something different than what you are now experiencing. The reason that the numbers will dwindle as we go along is you either believe or you don't. And if you believe in any part of this, I ask you to let's together do our best. Let us make some kind of a commitment inside that in however much time we have left, that you will vow before this action ends that you will become totally aware of your full enlightenment. Some of you have spent many, many years here. And I'm very grateful. And the gift that I would ask you to claim, to really claim with all of your being, is that state where suffering and pain and confusion and doubt is not present is possible for you now in this lifetime. I don't care if you are 85. I don't care if you're 95. It's not a matter of time, unless you believe it's a matter of time. And one of our jobs in the next months is to wear down and break apart the idea that it takes time. Just as did it take time for the woman's head to pop back on her shoulders? It was an ever constant. It doesn't take time. It just takes the doing. And so let us talk about the doing. You begin to wander around aware now that all of your deep concerns with your money and your love affairs and your this and whatever it is, I mean, yes, go ahead, do them. But while you're doing them, as you are paying attention to doing them, I want you to know they've got nothing to do with finding God. And that you can have the most amazing life, full of all the things that you want, and that is not going to give you the bliss of consciousness. What is going to give you that is to realize that whatever you are looking at, thinking about, experiencing, action is impermanent and has nothing to do with it. That there is something much more intimate, much more immediate, much more constant that you are constantly feeling and experiencing, and that is it. And when you just learn to do this moment after moment, it begins to aliven. It is all always in total pulsating, magnificent presence. Example, I think. There's so many we could give, but for example, you know, you breathe all the time. But most of you are not aware that you breathe all the time. You've forgotten, you know, breathing happens. But you've forgotten, you know, you don't know how you breathe or how often you breathe. Do you breathe long? Do you breathe short? You know, you don't know, but it's going on. It's like that. And then once you begin to pay attention to breath, then you begin to understand breath. Then you begin to feel breath. You see, you don't feel your breath, do you? Those of you who are not paying attention, you don't feel your breath. You know, it goes on and on. The only time is when, like Mary Margaret, you contract some kind of a condition from the dust in the Himalayas, and so now you pay attention to your breath. But as soon as you get well, that's the end of that. So all of these things, which are constantly going on, you've ceased to pay attention to. Another thing, we've talked about this before, let's just bring it out again. Example here, you do not decide to see. You do not say, I am going to see now. Seeing happens. Seeing is a spontaneous something that you cannot do, but that it happens. Another one, hearing. You don't decide, I'm going to start hearing. You know, you might say, I'm not going to listen to that, or I would like to hear that. That's a different thing. But the very spontaneous happening of hearing and seeing and breathing come from another eye, another part of awareness. Something else is at work. And that something else is the eye of total full awareness. And it is what you are seeking. And it is such a joke, because you are seeking that which is already aware of itself. And when you see this, this is why they have those wonderful portraits of all of the awakened ones just laughing their heads off. Because it is so funny. But to say that to you in the midst of your misery can be an insult. You understand? But it is very funny. And if you'll just trust for the next few months and just begin to practice, then you will know. And you will be one of those then that moves into the world and carries with you that magnificent, ever-present knowing that no matter how bad things look, no matter how painful things may become, no matter what is happening, you look on it all from that place of absolute knowing that all's well. And that you never force anyone, that you don't even have to have patience, because, you know, someone said that Bartholomew, whatever that is, had a lot of patience, because we've gone through the same material relatively frequently. Well, like 14 years, for example. But I would like to correct it, because there is no sense of patience. Because if we talk about patience, then we have impatience. And patience means that we have to hope and hope and hope that you will one day awaken. And what you need to know is that the reason there's no patience or impatience is there's absolute knowing that you will awaken. You absolutely will awaken. So it doesn't matter. Since there is no such thing as time-space, do it now, do it later, do it here, do it there, I don't care. I know. I know. Whatever I is, the I that is the vastness that we have been sharing all these years, that I awareness knows with absolute knowing that you will awaken. And I'm not worried about you, because I know. I know. What do I know? That you are the awakened one. That you are absolutely the enlightened one. I know it. And all I can do is sit here and try to remind you. But hurry up, because we don't have a lot more time. Those of you who choose to come next time, please feel free to write a question out about this issue. Please don't ask me if the earthquake's coming, if the tidal wave's coming, if this is coming, if that's coming, because in the end, all's well. Whatever happens, happens. My job is this. If you have any questions about this approach, any questions about it, please bring them. Hand them either to Justin or Joy before the meeting. We'll be glad to address them. This is your teaching. But between now and then, two things I'd ask. One, that you really dwell on what we've said of the total impermanence of your ever-encompassing, nauseously familiar problems. Your all-encompassing, nauseously familiar problems have got you, you know, I stuck. And when you are looking at them, and then the more horrendous they are, the more attention you give them, because, you know, they're bigger, so now you give them more, and so on and so on, and that's fine. There's no problem with that, except it isn't going to get you to the bliss. It isn't going to get you to the sea of conscious awakening, which is what this is all about. And so if you walk around beginning to laugh a little about it, and when you watch yourself repetitively going over, as you're driving back to wherever, pay attention to what's going on in your mind. You can either go through your mind, perfect example, you can either sit around in your mind, just sit around in your mind, going over it and over it. We've talked about this before. 95% of the thoughts you have today, you'll have tomorrow. That's a very boring bathtub that you're sitting in. And you just sit and sit and sit. Somebody throws a few glasses of water in and changes it, but eventually it goes back to the same. So you can either sit around in that, or you can decide to become aware that there is some kind of awareness, some familiar feeling that is present at the same time that your thoughts are coming and going. And that is what I ask you to be aware. Drop out of thought and into awareness. If you do these two things on a consistently conscious way, you are going to begin to release the incredible tightness that you have around your problems. You're going to begin to feel them for what they really are, which is ever-changing, ever-changing, ever-changing. Gossamer, smoke. You see, now you think your problems are concrete and God is smoke. And I'm saying it's the opposite way around. That your problems are smoke-like and change constantly if you're paying attention. But that which is aware of the thoughts, that which is aware of the feelings, that which is hearing your own voice, that which is hearing your own thinking, that which is seeing your own sight, that is what is the eternal constant, and that is what you're seeking. So you decide. Now, in the last statement we'll make, but I want you to please know with all of your being, for every time that you make this motion toward dropping out of the ongoing mental drama and just being silently aware, I want you to know that your small effort is met in vast, vast, vast amounts of tremendous help and support. You are not alone. There are endless, vast, magnificent, compassionate fields of energy that are waiting to assist you in every moment of this homecoming. But please, your part of it is you must try. You must try to do what you don't do. You must try to be aware without trying to do something. We'll talk again and again and again. Practice. And out of your practice, bring questions. Well, I think it is you that have been very patient. My deep thanks to you. Please give all of this some consideration. And if it feels like a possible approach, then let's just throw everything we have into it. And let's do it. Because now's the time. There will never be a better time. Let's do it now. We've come this far. Why not? So, my thanks to you. Those of you who'd like 10 minutes of non-trying, please remain.